This is SB Nation Radio. Here's Joe Spano.
Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that.
The Boom Boom Pow, the Black Eyed Peas bring us back here on SB Nation Radio. But without any further ado, out to the SB Nation Radio guest line, where we bring in to talk all things Miami Marlins. He's Eli Sussman from SB Nation. Eli, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining me tonight.
It's the highlight of my night, Joe. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you must have a pretty boring evening if I'm the highlight of your night.
You know, you could say, you know, baseball every day for the last 4.5 months. It gets a little repetitive.
Especially Marlins baseball, there ain't much to be excited about. But we spent this entire hour talking about the legendary Nature Boy, Ric Flair. So we went all kinds of other directions. And as I said, in honor of the Nature Boy, I'm sitting here with one of my Rolexes on as I do the show. So I know RF, when he wakes up, he'll be proud to know that I got one of my Rolexes on and we can compare notes. But we probably should get to Marlins ownership. It looks like new sheriff in town, as it were, Derek Jeter, part of a large and varied ownership group that is going to purchase the Miami Marlins. Now, riddle me this, and I guess this is the place to start. How is Marlins ownership losing $60 million a year despite receiving $50 million in revenue sharing, having the 20th lowest payroll in the league, and they got a new stadium to boot? How do you lose $60 million a year with all that in your corner?
Yeah, well, I could spend a whole hour going through everything that's contributing to that, because it's never one thing, but it always starts with the fact that the team's just not any good. And, I mean, they're flirting with 500 this year, but it's the longest playoff drought in the National League. They haven't even – they won the World Series back in 2003, but haven't made the playoffs since then. And, you know, at the very least, you need one of those pennant chases to kind of excite the fan base and keep them interested and keep them believing. So, I mean, it starts with that, the fact that the roster just has been mediocre year in, year out. And with that, you can't draw people to the ballpark. If you can't – there's no demand on the ticket prices. You can't really – charge high prices for the tickets, so they're just not making much money from the people that do show up at the gate. But a lot of it comes down to the TV contract, too. Every team has their own regional TV deal. The Marlins have theirs with Fox Sports Florida, and it pays out one of the lowest annual sums out of any team. So the ratings are down for the TV, and the TV network isn't giving much money to the Marlins, even though the revenue sharing helps. So it's a lack of interest on all fronts, mainly because they're just not competitive, and hoping the new ownership can change that.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to ask you. With all that in the minus column, how does a new ownership group fix this?
I mean, it starts with an infusion of cash that elevates their payroll a little bit. Year in, year out, they've floated in the bottom third of payroll that they're giving their team, only a few years where they've really topped $100 million salary in any given year. So obviously some extra cash would help. But the tough part is really choosing how to get more talent into the organization, because the money helps. But the fact is there's just so many roster holes. Giancarlo Stanton is on a tear that really we haven't seen in years from anybody, and something we've never seen from the Marlins, but he alone can't carry the team. They don't really have a pitching staff. So it really starts with figuring out which established talent you can trade to get younger, controllable players, and specifically younger, controllable pitchers, so that you could fill out the roster and so that you're not leaning on any one guy too much. They need to decide if they're going to rebuild and how far they're going to go with tearing down the current roster in order to create a more sustainable future.
Well, you mentioned the face of the franchise. His name is Giancarlo Stanton. He makes a boatload of money each year, and if the Marlins clear that salary off the books, they probably would be back to being somewhere near, well, they'd be fairly close to breaking even. That said,
right,
he did clear waivers. Is he somebody the Marlins would consider training to perhaps bring back a mother load of prospects in order to start the latest rebuilding project down in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call. You have to at least consider it. just because he's peaking right now. He's a guy that, you know, he's been a Hall of Fame talent since they called him up, but everything's really clicking with him right now. He's not swinging and missing anymore. Everything he swings at goes over the fence. And aside from just being a really well-rounded athlete, and as high as the salary is, and even with the contract for the next decade, that's really tough for other teams to consider swallowing. But when he's healthy, which he is right now, and which he really hasn't been for years and years, he's such an impact talent that they could really get a lot in return, and that can address so many areas of the roster. With the pitching staff, maybe they get a young outfielder that has potential to be a starter, even if it's not going to be the next Stanton. They need more bodies to fill all these holes on the roster. So, I mean, that's something they'll definitely consider. And there's only so many teams that they could link up with, again, because of that big contract that he has. It's still $295 million left on the contract because it's so backloaded. So it's tricky, but they'll absolutely have to consider moving him, yeah.
Eli Sussman, SB Nation, joining us here. We're talking all things Miami Marlins, most notably new ownership in town. And obviously, there's a lot of names in this ownership group, a lot of people putting in a lot of money. But the face of this ownership group is going to be somebody by the name of Derek Jeter, making a very small monetary investment compared to the amount of control he's going to have, and his name will carry a lot of weight. You know, I mean, I know in his time in New York, Derek Jeter did next to nothing wrong. You know, he's kind of a, it's almost like you genuflect, you know, in front of Derek Jeter. He's one of these guys, every time he opens his mouth, he always says the right thing. He always does the right thing. And even when he doesn't, he does the wrong thing in such a way with so much grace and class that he still gets away with it. You know, what do you see this ownership group doing right out of the box? And what kind of a magical impact do you see Derek Jeter having on the city of Miami as it relates to their baseball franchise?
Well, specifically, what we're hearing is Derek Jeter's throwing in about $25 million of his own money into what's a $1.2 million sale. So that's barely 2% stake in the team. Really, the biggest money is coming from this other businessman named Bruce Sherman. But what Jeter is going to have a big say in is the baseball operations, obviously. They intend to make him like the CEO of the team, where he'll be signing off on all the baseball decisions. The general manager will be reporting to him. And, I mean, but just as you mentioned, his image is so pristine, and that doesn't necessarily win you ball games. But when you're talking about the team losing money because of the lack of fan interest, his image makes a big difference. His name is so powerful, especially in that market. There's a lot of New York transplants that already are big Jeter fans that may have been Yankee fans before they moved down to Miami. But it's just having some faith in the ownership group. Even though he's never done something quite like this before, he's immediately going to have a lot more trust from the fans than Jeffrey Loria, the previous owner, did. And, I mean, that's going to go a long way in just the public perception of the moves he's making. And maybe that does bring more people to the TV or bring them out to the stadium just because they believe in Jeter, even though he's not playing for the team and he's not going to take the big at-bats should they make it to the playoffs. He brings a lot of credibility and just that, you know, that popularity he has, that beautiful image he has, it's a big improvement for what they had, because ownership, as it was really driving a lot of people away, and this is going to do the opposite.
Well, I can tell you, lifelong Yankee fan, lifelong New Yorker, yes, I've had to move over the years for this great career in radio, but what I've learned is, in Jeter, we trust. So Marlins fans should be happy. Is the fan base excited and happy about this new ownership group and this ownership change? And are they excited and optimistic at what St. Derek can bring down to Miami?
Absolutely. Again, a lot of it had to do with just the contrast between him and the old ownership group. This is an old ownership group under Jeffrey Loria that got into really well-publicized disputes over season ticket holders, where he brought lawsuits against some of the fans in order to recoup as much money as he could from them. He's a guy that really went out of his way to anger people that were giving their hard-earned money just to see him. And this is just such a polar opposite that before we even know whether they make good decisions or not, just the fact that having a new face in there and, again, having a hero in there, a hero to some of the same people that are now Marlins fans. Jeter was a big staple of their childhood and their fandom earlier on in their lives. So it's a pretty good scenario, but I think everybody's also just realistic about how far the team needs to go to be competitive. Again, that's probably the number one driving force in turning this around, is obviously making the team deep enough to compete every year.
All genuflect for St. Derek, trust me. If anybody can get it done, it's him. I guess final couple of things before we let you run as we're kind of getting up against it. Any idea how long it might take for this team to be any good, number one? And I'll kind of ask these as a two-part question. And is there any chance they're relocated just because they really don't draw very well? Or is this ownership group committed to making it work in Miami?
Yeah, well, the second part's the easiest. I don't see them facing any threat of relocation, mainly because of the new stadium that they have down there in Miami. That it's a venue that it's kind of an unusual location, and that's kind of away from the beach itself. It's a few miles inland from there. It's not the best location, but being a new facility with a lot of the modern amenities, they're going to be able to charge what they should be charging for tickets once the team is competitive again. And even if it's not competitive again, I don't think they face any threat of bottoming out and having to relocate. There's so many different avenues that they could go in trying to turn it around. So it really depends whether they agree with many of the fans that some sort of rebuild is needed, that some of the current talent is going to need to go so that they can rebuild what's one of the weaker farm systems in the sport. It really depends who they believe is indispensable, what core pieces they hold on to, and whether they actually get what they deserve in return. Because that was a big issue the last few years, is that when it was time to trade the veterans, they didn't get the package they needed to shore up the future. So it's going to be fascinating to see what kind of differences in player evaluation and what type of relationships Derek Jeter and some of the other new bosses have with other teams around the league in order to get fair deals for the team and make for a sustainable future.
Eli, thanks so much for a few minutes. Let's do this again soon. As the Miami Marlins make news around the world of Major League Baseball. I really do appreciate it. You enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks so much, Joe. You too.
My pleasure. Bye-bye now. That was Eli Sussman, SB Nation, joining us right here on SB Nation Radio. Up next, we'll preview game night with Matt Peralt, live in living color from Las Vegas, Nevada. That's how we'll take you home next on SB Nation Radio. I'm Joe Spano. No flipping.